You're listening to Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Episode 8, Upon Further Review. Eddie Pascal here in the Beat Lab with producer Trav. And, case of good news, bad news a little bit. Good news, regular season, we're off and running. Bad news, Raiders took an L. First one of 2018, Monday Night Football. Just couldn't keep up with the Los Angeles Rams. Played a really good half though, a really strong 30 minutes against, you know, a team that a lot of us think are gonna end up playing for the Super Bowl in Atlanta later this year. But you know, just couldn't keep it up for the full 60. But on to the next, as they say. And the beauty of the short week, we've been talking about it for the past couple of days, is as disappointing as Monday night was, and you know, we talk about all the time, you can't overreact, it's one game, and I'm the firmest believer in that, do not overreact. But Monday night comes, it happens. On to the short week, on to the Denver Broncos. So that's where we're going to start. We're looking ahead now to Denver. Let's just kind of look back real quick at Monday night against the Rams and see what we can see from a positive standpoint. Obviously, the Raiders take a loss. It's never good. But if you look at that first 30 minutes, and I think Coach Gruden said it the best and kind of summarized it about as effectively as he could. He goes, it was a tale of two halves. You look at halftime after 30 minutes, Raiders up 13-10. Defense is playing really well, limited Goff to 4 completions for 60 yards. Did have the touchdown, but it's kind of a gimmicky touchdown. So 4 of 10 for 60 yards. And on the other side of the ball, Derek Carr, super efficient, 20 of 24, 199 passing yards, no touchdowns. But he was rocking and rolling, moving that offense. Marshawn went full beast mode in week one, which was awesome to see. But yeah, then for whatever reason, after the half, it didn't materialize, and, you know, the Rams go on a 23-0 run to close out that game, and obviously the score, perhaps not truly indicative of what that game really, you know, really was. It was pretty close there into the fourth quarter, but, yeah, it was, like I said, a tale of two halves, and for whatever reason, couldn't keep it going for 60 minutes, but such is life. And I was talking to Kyle Martin Media, a.k.a. KMM, and before going into this game, and we talked about it after, and I said, regardless of what happens week one, whether it's good, bad, great, somewhere in between, you can't overreact. It's 1 week. And week one, year after year after year after year, is just super funky. It's a funky week. I mean, you look around the league. You know, the Browns tie with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't remember the last time we had a week one tie. But it's just things like that where you can't really get an accurate gauge of what a team is after 60 minutes of football. You just can't. It's impossible. And I think the Raiders kind of fall into that as well, where you can't read too much into what happened Monday night at the Coliseum. Obviously, would you like to have gone home with a win, a week one win, starting 1-0, headed off on the road? Absolutely. 100%. But it's 1 week. You play 15 more, and, you know, for that reason, let's just relax. But we're moving on. So in the spirit of moving on, the spirit of putting the Rams game behind us, we're off to Denver. And we could not be more – let me stop here for a sec. You guys know, you guys that have listened to the first 7 episodes, we ride with the special teams unit here on Upon Further Review. We ride with them. Those are our guys. They never get enough love. We appreciate them. They do vital work. And, you know, for that reason, we are very excited to welcome into the Beat Laboratory here at 1220 Harbor Parkway the kicker for the Silver and Black, Mike Nugent. Mike, thank you for hanging out with us for a couple of minutes in between meetings.
You just came up from working, from getting to meet our new long snapper, Trent how do we pronounce his name?
Sieg. Yeah.
So just, I guess, general thoughts. How's it like to have a new guy in the mix?
You know what? It's kind of – it's one of those situations where it's tough because you're thinking, you know, it's still very fresh, losing a guy you've been working with for a good amount of time.
Yeah.
Even though I've only been here for so long, you just get to know people really well. And Andrew and I played for 4 weeks last year in Chicago together. So you just – no matter the personality, no matter the guy, you just hate to see anything like that happen, especially as someone that puts so much work and so much heart, you know, time into – what he does, like his craft. He really studies a lot, and he's one of those guys that I feel like the coaches did a great job picking a long snapper and bringing him in. But, you know, really excited to work with Trent today. Just showed him around the facility just a little bit. And just hopefully I can be the vet that, you know, sets a good example. Just tell him, hey, just keep your eyes on us. We'll show you where to go. It's first day. You don't know where to go, what you're doing, except you know how to long snap. So that's the good part. That's all you need to make sure you're at the right place at the right time and throw the ball back.
So going back to Monday night for a sec, 2 for 2 on field goals. And both of those are with Lee as the long snapper, right?
Yes. Yeah, they both were.
I mean, shout out to Big Lee. I mean, how challenging is that for him to kind of middle of the Monday night madness to kind of step in there and get off two what were really ended up being really, really important snaps?
You know what? That's one of those things that I think will be very won't get the credit that it's due. Him coming in like that and just not having a team rep with us, at least since I've gotten here. I'm not sure about the past, but coming in and performing like that is just – I was really impressed with how he kept his head on straight and really focused on what he had to do. And, you know, this is a guy that's going in a lot in other positions as well. So I think, I really look up to him for the way he handled it and did a fantastic job for us.
I mean, you got to give some love to Johnny, too. I mean, you look at what Johnny's dealt with, you know, in the 6 months he's been here, left-footed kicker, right-footed kicker, holding for, you know, handful of guys, different long snappers. I mean, yeah. As a rookie coming in, I mean, this dude's gotten everything thrown at him possible.
He really has. And, you know, I didn't tell him during the game, but I was going to tell him, like, you know, you've been here for long enough to realize that this nothing ever goes according to plan. You know, things are going to happen and – you know, whatever the game or the situation brings you, you have to be able to perform. And, you know, if you can't, you know, the team is going to go out there and capitalize on certain mistakes. So I think, he's done a great job with that. And, you know, it's also a credit to how hard he works and his character. He takes a lot of pride in what he does, whether it's punting or, holding. And I think as a kicker, you really appreciate guys that work hard at that.
When's the last time you've had an emergency snapper situation?
To be honest with you, off the top of my head, I can't really think of an emergency snapper situation. I had a punter go down like week 17 in Pittsburgh once. He got a helmet right to his jaw and broke his jaw.
Oh.
And so I had to punt the second half, but we only had to punt twice, so that was good. I didn't have to go out too often, but that was really the only really emergency situation I've been in my career.
You a decent punter?
That was all right. Yeah. I was kicking to Antonio Brown when he was in his prime as a starter into the wind. But luckily, the punts were low and bad enough where he couldn't get to him in time. So I got about a 15, 20-yard roll. So I had a 44.
Yeah,
net,
there you
so
go.
I was happy with it.
I used to when Bass was here, I asked him one time because we were talking about emergency kicking situations, and obviously he was the emergency punter. I said, so Bass, how far do you think you could punt? And he looks me dead in the eyes in that thick Polish accent, and he goes, 70 minimum. Yeah. I go, 70? You could emergency punt 70 yards? And he's like, oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. But 44 is not a bad average either.
No, it is 40-40.
Oh, 40-40. Yeah, oh,
40-40.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
So I was happy to get a 40-yard net out of it. And, yeah, I just want to make sure that, you know, the stats are correct.
That's right. That's right. So this is team 7 for you, right?
I think it's 7 or 8, something like that. Yeah, I was counting it off the other day. But, you know, you always want to be with one team the whole time. But, you know, things happen. You go back and forth a little bit, and I think I always take to heart when I hear older retired guys saying, like, you know, it's not a right to play in this league. It's a privilege. And I feel like ever since day one, I've always thought, like, it's a privilege, and I'm so lucky to be here. And not like, oh, this is owed to me or anything like that. I think, you know, when you work hard, you know, things kind of fall into place. Sometimes you work hard in the NFL, and sometimes things don't work out. But as long as you can keep kicking the ball straight, that's all you can ask for. Everything else is out of your control.
Do you keep things from your different stops? Do you keep jerseys? Do you keep – I'm interested when we talk to guys about kind of like the little mementos they keep or don't keep.
Yeah, I think my biggest thing – I always want at least one jersey from like a game jersey that I played in. But I've kind of set up this rule for myself. Like if I played an actual game, not preseason or – obviously just, you know, practice for a week, but if I played an actual game, I like to keep the helmet, so I have every helmet.
Oh, nice.
Like every game helmet from every team I've played, like from high school all the way up through
today. Oh, for real?
Yeah.
So is it one per game or just one per team?
No.
I was like, shoot, man, that's like 200, that's 200 helmets or something.
And it's cool because I can look at them hanging up and say, okay, that's the actual helmet I wore in a real you know, real game that happened whatever season.
Is it is that what the Mike Nugent man cave looks like at home?
Not so much, just in the garage, right above my tools, just a little spot right there.
So I have to ask you, because we've talked about it a lot, and we did it with Johnny, where we're big, like, nickname guys in the studio. I think it helps us keep track of everyone, you know, and it helps you put a face to the name and all that kind of stuff. So Nugent, I assume you at some point have gotten a cool nickname or two off of the last name.
You know what? People have just shortened it to Nuge.
To Nuge.
That's what a lot of teammates have called me and coaches. But nothing else in particular. So, yeah, just Nuge at this point.
You're cool with that? You're cool with Nuge?
Definitely.
Nuge works?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we'll put that in the archives. Nuge works. So off to Denver this week. Mm. And I always find it interesting talking to the kickers going into Denver week. How much can you feel it kicking there compared to kicking here at sea level? Can you feel that a difference?
Yeah, you can. And it's not so drastic where you can just tap it and it goes 50 yards, anything like that. And I remember talking to a punter. I think he went to Colorado when I was in college. And I remember people kind of telling him, you know, oh, you know, no wonder you have such a good average, you kick in Colorado. And he made a point. He's like, that doesn't make the ball spiral. You know, I do. So I always thought about that with kicking. Like, you know, you still have to make it go straight, and as long as you put your foot on it, you should have good distance. And, yeah, you can feel it a little bit, but it's nothing. It really depends on the day. I've played in Denver when it's like this, like week two, but I played week 16 there. So it's one of those things, you just have to hit the same exact ball, and it might have a little more distance on it, but everything else just stays exactly the same.
What do you think the hardest conditions to kick in are?
You know what? It's kind of a tough call. You can always compare a cold windy game compared to like an early season dome game, things like that. But I always go into a game thinking, you know, never thinking, oh, this is so tough. What do I do here? Because everyone else on the other side of the field is playing the same conditions. Whether it's a dirt infield like we play on a few games, or if it's a really cold windy day, everyone's got the same. And I always think about, I think Jack Nicklaus always said, he knew the guys that were going to have a tough day, the ones that were always talking about, oh, it's windy, like, I don't know if I can handle it. And I just remember seeing an interview of him just saying, like, you know, I don't worry about the wind. I let everyone else worry about that.
I like that. Our boss is going to be very pleased. He's a big quote guy.
Oh, okay.
He loves sending out his little motivational quotes, get the people going. And
I wish I knew the quote more exact, but it's on those lines where he's just like, I don't bring it up. I don't talk about it. I let everyone else worry about it.
Well said. So, bringing up the dirt, how long does it kind of take to feel comfortable kicking off that dirt and at the Coliseum there?
You know, I think it's one of those things that when you first do it, you give it so much credit. So you're trying to play for, you know, what your body might do, but at the end of the day, just do everything exactly the same. You know, your cleat, my left plant foot it's going to grab in the dirt and it's going to grab fine. You just hit your regular ball. And that's one thing I learned, especially this week. Just hit it regular, and everything's going to be the same as if it was, you know, coming off grass or turf.
Don't let the dirt get in your head.
Yeah.
Cool. So wrapping it up with here with Mike Nugent. So, Mike, we were having this great debate earlier today, and it's kind of silly, but I'd love to get your take on this. What is your favorite season in terms of the weather? I mean, it's probably a little harder in Northern California here where everything's kind of the same all the time. But you big winter guy, fall guy? Summer?
You know, it really depends. I think once, and I always reference Ohio because Ohio's got pretty clear seasons, and now they could be pushed back. I've had 65-degree days in December and also 35-degree days in May, so it kind of can be tough. But I think once – it's actually, I guess you could say it's a lot like the weather right now. You know, chilly in the morning, chilly at night. So I'd say early fall when the heat is still kind of around. So in the afternoon, you have a nice warm weather, but a little chilly in the morning and at night. So, you know, when you wake up, it's nice. It's cool out, but then it's just gradually going up. But when you go to bed, it's nice and cool. And so I'd say like early fall has been my favorite.
Kind of the best of both worlds too, right? Excuse me, where you get that brisk in the morning. You feel like, all right, we're building to a winter or an autumn of some sort. Yeah. But then it's 70 degrees during the day.
But then the only issue is like, okay, what do I wear in the morning? Because it's going to be a totally different, you know, I don't want to wear a big jacket in the morning and then it's 70 degrees in the afternoon.
That's a great point. So I went to the University of Oregon and we ran into that problem too, where the weather changes so quickly, where it's like, oh, it's super sunny right now. I'm going to wear basketball shorts and, you know, a t-shirt to class. You leave class 90 minutes later, it's 55 degrees and it's raining. And now you look like that guy who wasn't ready. And
well, and I've noticed, sorry to reference Ohio again, but I've always noticed that when you're in a store or in class, they still have the heat on. So you have long sleeve and pants on for the morning cold, but the heat is on in there, but it's hot outside. So it's like, it's kind of tough to find that balance.
It's a miracle too that people don't get sick more often, going from all the, you know, it's cold outside, then it's hot inside, then you go back outside and it's raining. It's weather, man.
Yeah.
It's a crazy thing. Well, Mike Nugent, thank you for hanging out with us. Nuge,
thank you.
Our new friend, the Nuge. So appreciate you, man, and we'll catch you later.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
All right, a big shout out to the kicker for the Silver and Black, Mike Nugent. Big early fall guy, so much respect there. But while the Raiders did not enjoy a victory formation on Monday night, we'll still enjoy one, right, Travi? So we welcome in our senior vice president of financial liquidation and advising, Kyle Martin Media, a.k.a. Kyle's Feed, a.k.a. KMM. So, KMM, first off, how are your stocks this week?
Oh, the stocks, you know, just actually the one that I've had on my watch list just went up 5% today. So the fact I didn't get in when it was at $20, now it's up to $35. It's really kicking me while I'm down.
That's a crushing blow for a man of your proclivities.
Sometimes you gotta take a risk, and I wasn't willing to take the risk. I wanted to watch it, but I waited too long.
Yeah, just waited. It's a little too long. But you can still get in, right?
I mean, yeah, it's never too late. But you know, you like to get in when it's at a low point.
That's fair.
Rise with the stock.
Speaking of things that we're hoping will rise coming up, the Silver and Blacks win total from 0-1 on Sunday, but going to be a tough one. Division game's always funky. But before we get into that, what did I tell you going into week one, regardless of what happened?
Week one is never indicative of how the season will go.
Absolutely. 100%. Doubling down on what we talked about. It's just funky. It's a funky week. But since week one has closed, and in between the end of Monday night and heading off to Denver on Saturday, we have made a plethora of roster moves.
Oh, man, multiple.
Tons.
Multiple. But which is good.
It is good.
Yeah.
You know, Coach Gruden said he's going to do whatever he has to do to get the best 53, and we're getting the best 53. So let's do a quick recap. In the White Tiger, he's back.
Crazy. I'm happy that he's back. We got someone that, not that Amari can't stretch the field, but Martavis, as we've discussed many times.
Straight wheels for Martavis. Also in, new long snapper, Trent Sieg.
Yep.
Unfortunately, Andrew DePaula goes down, put on IR for the season. Huge bummer. Really good dude. But such is the nature of the business, we got a new guy. And he's going back to Colorado for the first. He went to Colorado State. And it's pretty cool that his first game as a Raider will be in Denver. So that's pretty cool.
You know what I also thought was interesting yesterday? I was talking to Johnny Townsend about the highs and lows of what he's been through as a rookie so far. And I thought it was interesting that he said he was present for the tryouts of the long snappers when they came here the other day after DePaula suffered his injury. I don't know. I thought that was cool. That is cool.
I mean, you need to have that relationship, right? Like, you need to be able to, for Johnny as the holder, it's got to be a dude that he can trust and a guy he's comfortable with. And
absolutely.
That is a good nugget.
You know,
sure.
They got to have that chemistry.
Yeah. Also in, two new defensive tackles.
Yep.
McDonald and Hankins.
Jonathan Hankins and Clinton McDonald.
Boom. Big jelly to IR. Another big bummer. But yeah, I mean, this team is just, after week one, we're wheeling and dealing, baby. We're getting into it.
We're getting better is what we're doing.
We are getting better. Wave Shalik, Jelly to IR. Am I missing anything? I feel like we're missing one. DePaula to IR. But no, I mean, it's been a...
Johnny Holton of the practice squad.
Thank you. Johnny Holton back in the mix. Was on the active roster last year. Left for time, back on the P squad. So, yeah.
Goodbye, Mr. Hatcher, unfortunately.
Yeah,
had
adios to Keon.
A very memorable preseason.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But hopefully he lands on his feet somewhere. And, you know, like I said, another good dude who really made the most of his opportunities during that final preseason game and just ultimately came down to a numbers game, unfortunately, as it often does.
Unfortunate, but it's the business.
It is the business. These guys get it. They understand it's the business. So looking ahead now, Denver, week two. An important game for several reasons. One, opening of AFC West play. Division games. Always important. Always got to take care of business in the division. You take care of business in the division, it's your quickest way to get to the postseason, which is ultimately the goal for all of us here. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough one. You look at what that Broncos defense did last week against the Seahawks. And to be fair, the Seahawks offensive line not up to par with what we think the Raiders have here.
Sure.
But six sacks in your immortal words, gee whiz.
Gee whiz. Man, oh, man. Six sacks. That's going to be tough. But if anyone can stop Von Miller and company, it's Donald Penn in the offensive line.
That's right.
You've pointed out for a while now that anytime Von Miller and Donald Penn go toe-to-toe, I mean, not that Von Miller isn't successful,
sure,
you know, because he always affects the game in some way, but Donald Penn is almost a Von Miller stopper.
Yeah, I was talking to our public relations director, the great Will Kiss, shout out Will Kiss one time earlier this morning, about just that. And yeah, man, I mean, for whatever reason, I mean, Von Miller's a beast. I don't think we're not here to say that Von Miller is not an elite, all pro, all world, whatever you want to say. Dude is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get three sacks, force two fumbles. You know, he is by accident. The man is incredible. We'll see him in Canton one day. It's a pleasure to watch him do his thing. That said, it seems to me that Von Miller, for whatever reason, whenever he comes up against the Silver and Black, that he's, I don't want to say he's rendered ineffective, because he's one of those guys that even if he's not getting to the quarterback or whatever, like, you got to account for him. So if he doesn't even touch the quarterback,
he's affecting the game in one way or another.
He's affecting the game in countless ways. But yeah, he's just the dude. There was one big play Vaughn had a couple years ago. I can't remember what year it was. Trav, you might remember because he's better with this stuff than I am. But he got in the backfield, got to Derek, and then essentially just did what he did to Russell Wilson last week. Just took the ball straight away from him.
And then crawled away like a monster. Did you see his sack celebration? Oh, my goodness.
Aggressive.
Very. If that doesn't strike fear into your heart, I don't know what will.
Yeah. I still really like the Bruce celebration. I think the Bruce sack celebration is an underrated sack celebration.
I agree. Just flexing on him one time. Very casual, but it's very powerful.
It's also good for photo ops.
Mm-hmm,
you
sure.
know, he's certainly playing to the camera a little bit. What would your sack celebration be since we're...
Oh, man. My sack celebration? Oh, man. I'd have to put some thought into this, but I think I just hit a salute, you know. Nothing too fancy. I think
To the quarterback?
Yeah, just to everyone, you know, just our fallen brothers and sisters.
Just
you
salute.
Put me on the spot, man. I got to think of a better... I'd probably end up being like a Fortnite emote or something. Might hit him with an L or something. I don't know.
All right. Yeah.
What would yours be? All right, come in guns blazing over here.
Would my sack celly be? I think I might just hit a very respectful bow, and then actually, you know what I would do? This is what I would do. All right, 3rd and 7, lining up, coming off the edge. Bang! I got him. I get up, hit a quick bow, and then the V's for victory all around.
Sure.
Flash the V's.
I feel
then,
like,
and then go back.
Whether you can keep this in, whether you not want to or not, Trav. But I think, what if you busted out a heater and just started
just rip a heater?
Oh boy! Oh yeah!
Just pulling out of your sock. That is a powerful dude. That is a good sack celebration. You'd probably get fined for that, though. Right?
Oh, you'd for sure get fined if you puffed out. You just pulled a heater out of your sock and started puffing on it. But, I mean, it'd be a power statement.
Yeah, shoot, man.
You'd let everyone know what you were about.
Yeah, 100%. Shoot. Jet, what do you got, T-Bone? Sack Sally?
I'd probably go the headbanger salute and start, do a little metal sign, you know,
with
my hands.
That's good. I could ride with
that. Would you incorporate a little air guitar with that, or you just go strictly headbang?
I'd probably just go strictly headbang, but I need longer hair, I think.
Well, now that
like Clay Matthews could really pull that off.
Yeah, but now that you have this beautiful new hair,
yeah,
you're getting there.
Yeah, it's not long enough.
Yeah, in time. Yeah. Well, hopefully, we see another Bruce Flex. Actually, we should do this one of these days. We need to ask some of the rookies what their sack celebrations are going to be, because we haven't seen them yet.
Yeah, that's true. We don't really have any rookies on offense that I'm going to score a touchdown and celebrate, right?
Can't think of any.
No, neither can I. But, yeah, the rookie sack celebrations is a good one.
But your Arden Key has something.
Oh, man, he's gonna cook it up.
I think he's got something. Speaking of Arden Key, and speaking of the pass rush, one sack against Jared Goff last week. Not bad, right? Not bad. But going against Case Keenum, do you think getting those dudes up front going – obviously not Jellies because Jellies on IR, but the Ardens, the Bruce, you know, Big Mo, PJ, Fadal. Do you really see that as an area that these guys really need to start getting cooking now, starting Sunday?
I think so. I think it's going to be help build a little momentum. I mean, last week, to their credit, they, you know, the secondary really impressed me. You know, like, I think they held their own back there for
the
most part.
They
did. Brandon Cooks had some big plays, but I think if the defensive line's able to get going, it's just going to make the group as a whole more positive. And, I mean, as someone once told us, sacks come in bunches. So if you get those bunches early on here, I mean, that's going to bode well for you going forward.
That's true. I mean, I'm glad you brought up the secondary, too. I think that's one thing, the secondary, I should say. I'm glad that's – I think that's something that's kind of gone underappreciated a little bit, where obviously the positives from a game like Monday obviously get swept aside pretty quickly, and which is fair. But that secondary did a heck of a job, especially in that first half. I mean, Goff got his numbers towards the end. Like you said, Brandon Cooks got loose a couple times, but – I mean, it wasn't one of those performances where, you know, one guy was just feasting, you know.
Sure, yeah.
You look on the other side of things, I mean, Jared Cook went for 180 yards.
Absolutely, against one of the best secondaries supposedly in the entire league.
Yeah, McVay and his fellas can't be too pleased by that. I mean, I know that they won the game, but I don't know how many games going forward you're going to win when the tight end goes off for 180.
No, and I mean, as a defense, too, it's hard to – I don't know. I mean, I couldn't imagine trying to play defense against some talented wide receivers like Cooks, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and then have to worry about Todd Gurley, who can also catch out of the backfield.
Yeah.
The guy is a monster.
Yeah. I mean, see, I think that's gonna be a big one this week, is getting those guys up front going. But, yeah, I mean, I'm with you, where I'd like to see the secondary kind of keep it up and start kind of rolling. You know, we were talking about this on Tuesday when we came in after the game, and it's I can't remember last year if there was a game where the defense got their hands on as many passes as they did Monday night. I mean, granted, no interceptions, unfortunately, but, I mean, Leon Hall had an awesome pass defense. Rashawn was in the mix. Tyer had, like...
Marcus Gilchrist, too.
Gilchrist had one. I mean, like, I don't remember a game last year where we had that many guys, that many different guys getting involved and being, you know... disruptive in the passing game.
It was just refreshing to see players around the ball.
Yeah,
you know?
Shout out to Paul Gunther one time.
Yeah, Paul Gunther's really, you know, put into effect his system, and you can tell it's paying off. And I mean, it also helps when you have guys like Reggie Nelson, Leon Hall, who have been in his system before to communicate that to the guys around them. But I think that's part of the benefit of having the veterans on the team. You know, we had so much hubbub about Gruden bringing in all these guys who were, you know, not in the twilight of their career, but they, you know,
certainly in the later stages of their career.
Sure, but I don't think you can value enough the fact that they've seen so many different offenses line up, and there's different places that you need to be, and to be able to communicate that with the younger players goes a long way. And so I think that's why we're seeing all these pass breakups. They just know where to be.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of that veteran presence, we were talking to Markell last week, who said, we were talking to him kind of about having Derek Johnson, a vet in the room, and Markell obviously played a ton last year as a rookie, but still a really young dude, a dude who's, you know, obviously in his second year, is now learning his second system in 2 years. And he was saying that having Derek just in that room, you know, kind of that whole cliche of being another coach on the field. But he said, you know, Derek also is the kind of guy that he'll come up to me when we're not in meetings, when we're kind of just, you know, around, and quiz me on stuff and make sure that I know, oh, what do you do on X player? What happens when this happens? And that's good to see, right? I mean, that's why you bring in a guy like Derek Johnson. That's why you have Reggie Nelson back. That's why you have Leon Hall. That's why you brought in all these veterans, a Jordy Nelson guy. I mean, that's why you have these dudes here, because you're not going to get that from a rookie. And that's no shot at a rookie at all. That's just,
no, it's just time and experience paying off.
Exactly.
I think, too, Steve Weiss from the NFL Network tweeted it during our game the other day. He said, Tyer Whitehead is one of the most underappreciated free agent signings of this entire offseason.
I would agree with you. 100%.
I couldn't agree with him more.
100%.
Tyer was all over the field, behind in the backfield. The guy's active. I think he's going to really impress a lot of people in Paul Gunther's system.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you look at – I'm trying to think back, but it was a third down. I want to say early fourth quarter. It was a third down, like third and six. And Tyer made a play, batted a ball down, and the Rams eventually punted the ball away back to the Raiders. And that gave Derek Carr and the boys a chance to tie the game in the fourth quarter. But if Tyer doesn't make that play, I mean, they were right outside field goal range.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference between 7 points and 10 points, especially at that point in the game. So like you said, I mean, Tyer's been, I mean, obviously the preseason, I mean, who do you know, what do you really get from the preseason? But yeah, I agree with you 100%, man. I mean, he's been a beast since he got here. I expect him to be a beast for the next 15, 16 weeks too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in Detroit the last 2 years, the guy had back-to-back 100-plus tackle seasons.
Yeah, you don't
too,
do that on accident. I mean, that's not something you can fluke your way into or luck your way into.
No.
I mean,
that's being around the ball, having a nose for it, and getting in there. And yeah, I think he's going to be a very essential piece in the defense this year.
Yeah. You worried about Coop?
No, not at all.
Me neither.
I mean, I get, you know, all these stats that are coming out about how he's – hasn't had more than 10 yards in X amount of games, but it's Amari Cooper. I kid you not, there's never been a day at practice where I've watched him do something and my jaw hasn't dropped, because I feel like he just has so many athletic gifts and abilities where it just takes one game and he could go off for 180 yards and 2 touchdowns, like the Chiefs game last year.
Yeah.
He was in kind of a lull, and then he goes off and rips the Chiefs secondary for a new one, and it's like, this guy's remarkable.
Yeah,
it just takes one play to get him going. And I know last week, Derek, you know, and Amari weren't really on the same page, but Amari not getting those targets opened up Jared Cook to go off.
100%. Yeah, I mean, obviously, if the Raiders win this game, we're singing a completely different tune, right?
Yep.
We're saying, oh, you know, the Raiders won the game. And Coop only had one catch. Could you imagine what he – you know what I mean? So I'm with you, man. I'm not worried about Coop. I'm not worried about Derek. It's 1 week.
It's good to know, too, that Coop's not worried either. Like, yesterday in the locker room, Coop was telling the reporters that, you know, does it matter to you if you're not getting X amount of yards that you're not showing up in the stats? And he goes, no, man, I could get one receiving yard, and as long as we win, that's all I care about. And as long, I mean, like, to hear that from a guy of his caliber,
the best wideout on your team, to hear him say that, that's good.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, it's all about winning.
It's all about winning. So speaking of winning, the Raiders will win on Sunday if.
The Raiders will win on Sunday if they can neutralize Von Miller and get rolling early. And then also be able to stop Case Keenum from, you know, linking up with Emmanuel Sanders and co.
Yeah, mine's similar. I mean, I think we have the same. We're of the same mind where you got to stop Von Miller. Mm-hmm. You can't let Von Miller eat. You got to find a way to neutralize him, or at least try to keep him in check for much of the game. Because I mean, he's one of those guys we've seen it year after year after year. He can single-handedly break a game open, and you gotta find a way to, you know, keep him at bay. The other one, I'm gonna go to Coop. I mean, let's get Coop rolling. I think, you know, you mentioned earlier that he's one of those guys who can just kind of explode, right? He can kind of just reappear and be dominant. So I think that if we can get Coop rocking early, if the Beast can keep pounding the rock the way he was on Sunday night, or excuse me, Monday night, I mean, I think those will be the two. You know, like you said, limiting Von Miller and getting Coop some action. But it's gonna be a fun game, man. I mean, division games are – there's, you know, they always talk about, oh, you know, there's 16 games, they're all really important. And they are. I'm not trying to discount that at all. I mean, but it feels different, division games.
Especially this early in the season to play the Broncos 100%. Week two. We won't have another division opponent until week five against the Chargers.
Incredible knowledge.
Well, you know, that's what I was researching. Yes. But, yeah, week two, you got to get that W early. And then especially because later in the season we're playing the Chiefs towards the end of our regular season, and that's obviously playoff time, getting ready to gear up for the postseason. All of them are win games. You got must win.
Yep. So I'm excited. It'll be a good game at what's there? I don't even know what they're calling their stadium. Mile High. It'll be a good game at Mile High. I'm excited. It'll be fun, high energy. It'll be good to see Derek go toe-to-toe with that beastly secondary, see what Coop has to say, you know, get Von Miller going. But that's going to do it for us. We're out of here. We are hitting the road in, I don't know, what, 36 hours, Trev? About that time?
Yep.
About that time. So, Eddie Pascal, for Mike Nugent, for KMM, for producer Trav, for engineer Jim, who stepped in again to do the Mike Nugent interview. Thank you, engineer Jim. We appreciate you all. And we will catch you guys next week, hopefully after Raiders win, on Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review on the Raiders Podcast Network.